Okay. So there's a Tibetan saying, when in meditation, watch your mind. When in public, watch your speech. When in meditation, watch your mind. When in public, watch your speech. And there's actually quite a bit of practice opportunity with speech. It's huge terrain. And you know, it's sort of similar to meditation in that once we know, you know, what the practices look like and begin to employ them, we can notice really significant difference in our inner peace and in the ways in which we impact those around us and beyond. It's a really fertile field of practice. So, but before I get into speech, I want to kind of lay the groundwork by saying that the Buddha taught, from my understanding, and I think there's a lot of different ways to see this, but the way I see the essentials of what the Buddha was teaching was that we really, in order to experience well-being and a lessening of our suffering, we really need to cultivate two energies. We really need to cultivate clarity, which leads to wisdom and insight. We really need clarity. And mindfulness is the energy that really supports us in seeing what's actually going on here in this life. So we really need clarity. And the other energy that we really need in order to experience well-being is care, the energy of care, of compassion. And so foundational to practice, the Buddha even taught this before meditation practice, is the practice of kind conduct. And in Buddhism, for lay people like us, I'm assuming we're all lay people, although maybe some of you are monastic, I don't know. But in Buddhism, for lay people, the basic sort of ground of conduct to support this path to well-being and freedom is a list called the five precepts, the five training precepts, five practices around kind behavior, essentially, ethical behavior. And I'll just read them to you. I'm sure most or all of you are familiar with them, but it's always nice to hear them again. So this is they. For the sake of training, I undertake the precept to abstain from the taking of life. For the sake of training, I undertake the precept to abstain from taking that which is not given. For the sake of training, I undertake the precept to abstain from sexual misconduct, meaning causing harm with our sexual energy. For the sake of training, I undertake the precept to abstain from unwise speech. And for the sake of training, I undertake the precept to abstain from intoxicants that cause heedlessness. So those are the five, and we can interpret those, you know, in many, many ways, but they're the five sort of foundational practices so that we can make progress with our efforts around meditation and inner ease. And what we notice when we practice with these kinds of things, and we're practicing more and more with not causing harm with our actions and with our speech, as is mentioned here, we feel less in conflict with other things and with people. And basically in Buddhism, the path to freedom means releasing reactivity, which is resistance, guardedness, craving, fear, you know, big energies that run through us humans all the time. But more and more as we release those, we experience inner ease. So we can experience that very often. We can experience this sometimes in meditation. We're just sitting quietly, our body's in a sitting posture, we're aware of our breathing, sensation, or maybe some choiceless awareness where whatever's predominant, we're aware of that, or aware of awareness itself. And we can notice this deepening and ease. In fact, for many of us, for certainly in my experience, I'm quite dependent on my daily practice to be a source of peace and perspective. Well, as is mentioned in the Tibetan saying, speech is also a place of ethics, of moral conduct, and a place for spiritual practice. Our interactions with people are almost always through speech, either spoken or written. So, you know, when you send a text or a social media post, we would call that speech as well. And if we want to have beneficial effect and not cause harm, being careful with our speech is actually essential, not only for our external life, but very much for our internal life. So what is wise speech? So here's the Buddha. He says, and what is wise speech? Abstaining from false speech, abstaining from slanderous speech, abstaining from harsh speech, and abstaining from frivolous speech. This is called wise speech. So not lying, not using a speech that's mean, essentially slanderous is, I would translate as mean, not using mean speech, abstaining from harsh speech, you know, also just angry tones and cruelty of all kinds, and abstaining from frivolous or pointless speech, which is sometimes gossip falls under that category, but also just kind of just sharing or talking without really having a point, which happens a lot, at least in social media, that can happen quite a lot. So those are all framed in the negative, and there's a value to that. They're kind of easier to track that way, but we can also frame them in the positive. So if we're talking about abstaining from false speech, what we're also saying is speaking truthfully and honestly. And the opposite of abstaining from slanderous or mean speech is to say that our speech would be helpful, uplifting. Abstaining from harsh speech, the opposite of that is that our speech would be gentle and coming from a place of goodwill. And then the opposite of frivolous or pointless speech would be speech that is appropriate, you know, timely and thoughtful, germane to the conversation, you know, not useless or meaningless. So those are the four: truthful, helpful, with goodwill, and appropriate. And an aspect of appropriate is timeliness. So something that we want to say could be truthful and useful and kind and thoughtful, but the person's not in a space to hear it right then. So our mindfulness practice would invite us to notice that also and not say the thing until it's timely for the person who will be receiving it. So those are four, plus the timeliness makes five, and we'll go into those more. But first, to say, the Buddha explained, a person who is known for gentle and beautiful speech will quickly be trusted and respected. Such a person enjoys a calm and peaceful state of mind and is able to interact with others lovingly. If we're known for truthfulness, our words are more readily believed. If we have a reputation for discretion, others trust us and find it harder to spread gossip about us. If our speech is consistently kind and gentle, others feel embarrassed to speak crudely or cruelly in our presence. So our speech has this beautiful impact on others. We affect each other quite deeply. There's a story in the Buddhist suttas about one of the Buddha's monks was, there were reports coming in that he was hanging out with people who were gossips, and his own speech, this monk's speech, was getting harsh and difficult for his community. So the Buddha called him in and told him the story of an elephant that was very beloved in the king's court and very well known, this big elephant, very well known for his gentleness. But then some thieves started hanging around the elephant's stall, making all their evil plans. And after a time, the elephant started to take in the vibe of the thieves and started to become a grumpy elephant and challenging and, you know, scary. So, but the king didn't, you know, the king loved this elephant, so went to his sage. And in the stories, this sage was the Buddha in a former life. Went to his sage and said, "What can I do to restore this elephant to his gentleness?" So the sage went and saw that this was, the thieves were meeting near the elephant's stall. So he said, bring some of your wisest advisors and have them set up their speaking table right in front of the elephant's stall. So the king did that. And the elephant then, getting the vibe of all the wise advisors, became gentle again. So the Buddha told that story to his monk, and the monk took it in and kind of changed who he was hanging out with to impact his speech. So one of the ways that we affect each other and are affected by each other is through speech. It really makes a big difference to our overall peace and the peace of everybody around us. So this is a quote from Buddhist teacher Gil Fronsdal. "The power and efficacy of mindfulness are directly related to how we live our lives. As mindfulness grows, we discover, perhaps paradoxically, that our mindfulness diminishes when we knowingly act or speak in ways that are harmful." There's a correlate, there's a direct relationship between our mindfulness practice, this beautiful practice that supports clarity and insight, and our speech. And the opposite is true too. We also come to understand how mindfulness can naturally increase as we avoid causing harm. In other words, it becomes clear that the quality of our mindfulness depends on the quality of our ethical life. The Buddha emphasized one activity of our ethical life that is frequently overlooked, especially because it's often not considered to be ethical in nature. This is our speech. Speech can be both beneficial and harmful. Positive, beneficial speech is nourishment for mindfulness. Negative, harmful speech desiccates it. So that's a little overall about speech. So now we'll look more carefully on at these four guidelines from the Buddha. So the first guideline is speaking truthfully, which begins with not lying. And actually, not lying is easier to manage and track than telling the truth. And I'll say why in a minute, but just track, you know, using our mindfulness to track when there's some impulse to either outright lie or exaggerate or lie by omission, and then experimenting with choosing the truth instead and then seeing how you feel is a really good place to start with speech. Abstaining from false speech or abstaining from lying is foundational to the rest of the guidelines. And it's said that the Buddha in all his lifetimes, it's said that he had many, many lifetimes, that's the teaching, And his lifetimes, or some of his lifetimes, are documented in these wonderful stories that are usually shared with children called the Jataka tales. And it's the Buddha in all these animal forms, usually, not always, but often, learning how to strengthen some beautiful quality of the heart. They're called the paramis, generosity or integrity or loving kindness or effort or equanimity, all these wonderful sort of morality stories of the Buddha in his former lives. But it said that through all his lives, coming up to the point where he was a Buddha, he never lied. Like, that was already there for him. He had already learned how essential that is for spiritual progress, is the just not lying. So that's something we can take right out of the gate. If we were to take one thing from tonight, and just I'll go home and work on bringing mindfulness to really clarity about truth telling, and then see the internal impact, there would be great value in that. In Dharma practice, we make a commitment to seeing the truth in all ways, which is what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is about dropping into the lived moment, the only place where we're alive, and then seeing what's true for us in that moment. That's exactly what it is. So speech, truthful speech, is the same, is it puts us in alignment with our mindfulness practice. When we're bringing mindfulness to speech in general, and to truth telling it or not lying in particular, something that becomes apparent is that a really important factor with speech, in terms of all these guidelines, but particularly with whether or not we're telling the truth, is looking at what our intention or our motivations are. They're usually unconscious, habituated, automated. But with mindfulness, we can feel them before we speak. What's motivating the desire to speak right now? And this is a quote from Buddhist monk and scholar Bhikkhu Bodhi. He says, "Though deceptive intention is common to all cases of false speech, lies can appear in different guises depending on the motivating root, whether greed, hatred, or delusion." And greed, hatred, and delusion are considered the three energies that run through human beings that cause our suffering, not our pain. Pain is inevitable as a living being. But the suffering that we create is our reactivity, is generally driven, or is taught in Buddhism to be driven, by either greed, craving, you know, hatred and aversion, delusion and ignorance. Those are the three difficult energies that we work to overcome and diminish. So he's saying that those three are at the root of all of our lying, all of our tendencies to not tell the truth. He goes on, "Greed is the chief motive, results in the lie aimed at gaining some personal advantage for oneself or for those close to oneself, material wealth, position, respect, or admiration." When I read that, I thought of a few years ago when there was that scandal where some wealthy people were paying colleges to get their kids into Ivy Leagues. Do you remember that story? That was so such a good example of greed, craving, you know, in this case for their kids, propelling them to do something dishonest and unethical. So greed as a motive, with hatred as the motive, false speech takes the form of the malicious lie, the lie intended to hurt and damage others. We see this a lot, again, in the social media world, unfortunately. It's very sad. When delusion is the principal motive, the result is a less pernicious type of falsehood, the irrational lie, the compulsive lie, the interesting exaggeration, lying for the sake of a joke. But all of that, you know, all of that is considered unskillful speech, in that none of it supports us moving towards greater ease and greater freedom. So again, that's something we can track with our mindfulness, particularly that dishonesty motivated by our delusion. Important not to beat ourselves up for any of this. There's an innocence, you know, we've all got our conditioning and what was modeled for us and so forth. And our mindfulness can expose it, it can be humbling, but then we have an opportunity to change it. I find a lot of spiritual practices just that, like exposing old behaviors that aren't skillful, but who knew, you know, like when we were 8 years old and developed these habits, and now mindfulness uncovers them, we can see this doesn't serve me, and we can try new behaviors. So, and beyond not lying, the Buddha taught that we can safeguard the truth by putting what we believe to be true in context. So this is when I said it's easier to track when we're wanting to tell something untrue than it is to track what's true. First of all, because generally most of what we say is true as far as we know. But then we can really bring our mindfulness to a finer point if we wish, and begin to see the context in which we think something is true. So I may believe something is true because of a belief or faith, and that's okay, but it's really important to name that. Like, I believe that, you know, whatever. I believe that reincarnation exists is really different from making a declarative statement like reincarnation exists. We put something in context. This is what the Buddha calls safeguarding the truth. So there's belief, and there's family or cultural tradition. I heard that, or I was told that, or I was brought up with, you know, is another context for something we believe to be true. Anecdotes that we've heard, stories that cause us to believe that something's true. You know, I've heard this, and to me it seems true. Again, rather than an authoritative, this is so. We can also believe things are true because of emotion or gut feeling. This really feels right to me, which is fine, again, as long as we're naming it that way. And then another one is logic. We may have logically deduced that something's true for us. As long as we're naming that, then the other person is on a fair playing field with us when we're in conversation about it. Otherwise, we see a lot of this declarative truth based on these conditions, and it can create a lot of havoc and a lot of confusion. So, you know, speaking the truth, and then also using our mindfulness to track when it's important to put our truth in context. So the second guideline is the opposite of slanderous or divisive speech. We'll call it helpful speech, which is speaking in a way that supports unity or harmony, bringing people together, which expresses itself as refraining from divisive speech. And we would call divisive or slanderous speech, we would call undermining speech, including undermining yourself. So undermining speech, fault-finding speech, and unkind gossip. That all falls under this rubric of slanderous or divisive speech. And again, we can use our mindfulness just to notice when that's happening and nip it in the bud. Experiment with just not saying it, even if we're thinking it. Experiment with not having it come out of our mouth, and then see how we feel. Remember, the teaching is that this is meant to support your ease. In Buddhism, truth is all about direct experience. So we see how it feels to not use undermining or fault finding or unkind gossip. There's an old folk saying, the tongue is a boneless weapon trapped between teeth. Yuck. The tongue can be a boneless weapon trapped between teeth. And what we're wanting to practice, this critical energy of care, we don't want our tongue to be a weapon. We don't want our speech to be a weapon. So bringing consciousness to when our words become mean or unkind is really helpful. When we speak in an unkind way, we notice that like the driver's seat in our mind has been taken over by the negative judging part of ourselves, the part that judges ourselves or judges others. And in Buddhism, that part is not considered the true self. Well, I mean, the whole discussion of self actually, I won't go there right now, but what's considered in alignment with the path of peace, let me put it that way, is the part of us that is deeply calm and confident, curious and compassionate. But we have, you know, we've developed strategies and aspects of ourselves that can take over. And when this more critical, judgmental part takes over, it can often resort to slanderous speech. It often comes in when we're hurt or irritated or angry. This negative judgmental part that uses slanderous speech. But sometimes slanderous speech or this kind of divisive speech comes in a little less from a place of aversion and more from just a habit of seeing or learning that we can, in the short term, bond with somebody else by putting a third person who's who's not in the room down, by putting somebody else down. We can get a short-term connection with somebody. But again, if we look internally, it creates a disruption internally, and in the long run is an alienating way to be in connection with others. And also important to say that refraining from divisive speech doesn't mean going along with inappropriate or unskillful behavior from others. Abstaining from divisive speech doesn't mean supporting conflict avoidance. We still need to speak up when something's wrong. But we can speak from a place of compassion, of fierce compassion, rather than from hatred or aversion. Or building up the self. That's again looking at the motive or the intention behind the speech. So we've talked about truthfulness and slanderous or divisive speech. The third type of speech, that type of harmful speech, is called abusive speech or harsh speech. Verbal abuse, profanity, sarcasm, hypocrisy, excessively blunt or belittling criticism, cutting, hurtful, offensive. That's all under harsh speech. It agitates and troubles us internally like these others do. Harsh speech is also, it's also taught in the text that harsh speech disrupts concentration. And you know, if you have a meditation practice, that concentration brings a form of really deep ease and happiness. And we don't want to disrupt our capacity to concentrate. So working with any habit we may have around harsh speech is really supports not only inner ease generally, but concentration in practice. This is a quote from the suttas. The fool thinks he has won a battle when he bullies with harsh speech. But knowing how to be tolerant and forgiving alone makes one victorious. Animals also feel the effect of harsh speech, as of course do, you know, all of us adults and children and babies, but also animals feel harsh speech. And I read a story that I thought was poignant, but not too devastating, from a teacher, Bhante Gudaratana from Sri Lanka. He says, my grandnephew has a great Alaskan husky named Taurus. Taurus is fascinated by the animals on television. He even tries to bite them. Because he's so large, when Taurus is attracted to what he sees on the screen, he blocks the view of the people sitting behind him. One day, a member of my grandnephew's family ordered Taurus to get out of the way. Her tone of voice was excessively hard and stern. The dog reacted by going to the basement. For a week, Taurus stayed down there, refusing to come out, even to eat. He emerged only occasionally to go outside to relieve himself. Then he went right back downstairs. Finally, the family had to go and plead with him, using sweet words in affectionate tones, before Taurus rejoined them. The soft words of my grandnephew's family won back the companionship of their beloved pet. Kind language is always appropriate and welcome. Our tone of voice makes a big difference. And we have some choice about this. You know, we may have learned to use harsh language or harsh tones, you know, in our cultures or in our families. I did. I learned to some degree that that was the norm. That was what was expected. And then fortunately for me, I was also able to learn later in life that actually I have a choice. I can practice tolerance and patience, and I can keep my tone kind, even as I set boundaries and say no. And in that way, I'm protecting my own heart. In some ways, it serves self-interest. But I'm also protecting, you know, any kind of like that story about the dog, you know, I'm protecting the beings around me as I develop more and more of this capacity into a habit, which is still a work in progress. So we've spoken about truthfulness and helpfulness and goodwill. And then the fourth and final one is appropriateness, as opposed to pointless speech or frivolous speech, which is defined as speaking at the wrong time, speaking of what is not real or what is useless, contrary to the Dharma, worthless, unreasonable, immoderate, and unbeneficial. Or gossip also. And when we say the word gossip in English, we may be referring to a whole range of negative speech, from malicious speech to careless chatter, and it's all considered unskillful, according to the Buddha. Gossip about other people is a problem, whether what we're saying about somebody else is true or not. And I thought I would share with you a short story from the Jewish tradition about gossip. Some of you may have heard it before. It's called the feather pillow. In the town of Pinsk, there lived a man who loved to gossip. He knew it was wrong, but he figured it was harmless, as most of the stories he was telling about other people were true. One day, he learned a weird but true fact about a local businessman and began to spread that fact around, as he'd done so many times before. The local businessman heard the rumor that was being spread around and became upset because he was losing customers. So he went to the local rabbi and said to the rabbi, "Is there anything you can do to help? This is ruining me. It's ruining my reputation." The rabbi said, "Of course, bring the storyteller to me and I'll see if I can help things." So the rabbi summoned the storyteller and said to him, "Storyteller, you must understand that what you're doing is wrong." The storyteller said, "I might know that, but I thought it would be insignificant because what I'm saying is true." The rabbi said, "Well, whether or not it's true, or if you believe it to be true, it's still wrong." The storyteller thought for a long moment and then said, "I think I understand, and I'm sorry. Is there any way I can fix this to somehow undo the hurt that I've caused?" The rabbi said, "I think I might know a way, actually. Do you know any feather, do you own any feather pillows?" The storyteller, taken aback at this, said, "I do, but I don't understand what that has to do with anything." The rabbi said, "You'll learn. Bring me a feather pillow." The storyteller was completely confused, but acquiesced and went to get a feather pillow. He brought it back to the rabbi, and she said, "Now that you have this, please go to the office, open the window, and tear the feather pillow open. Make sure that there are no feathers remaining in the pillow." Again, the storyteller was confused, but he did as she requested. He went to her office, opened the window, and tore open the pillow. Feathers went everywhere, in the books, behind the shelves, out the window, into the street below, everywhere. Once this was done, he went back to the rabbi and said, "I've done what you've asked. Now what?" The rabbi said, "The next thing that I need you to do is go and pick up each and every one of those feathers." The storyteller was shocked. "But Rabbi, that's impossible. The feathers are everywhere, behind the books, behind the shelves, out the window, into the street. How can I possibly pick up all those feathers?" She said, "Aha, now you see. Now you understand that what you said, you cannot unsay. What you've done, you cannot undo." Again, the storyteller was shocked, but he understood. He went and made a deep apology to the businessman. And from that day on, he only told stories about himself, about the things that had happened to him and the things that he had experienced, like the story of the feather pillow. This is another one of those things, like if we could just learn this one thing, gosh, can you imagine how much more peace there would be in the world? So I'll just close by saying that I'll close with a quote from Jack Kornfield and then a suggestion for a fun practice you might enjoy. Okay, so this is a quote from Jack Kornfield in his book, The Wise Heart. "Try this in your next argument or conflict. Take a pause. Hold everyone's struggle in compassion. Connect with your highest intention. Whenever things get difficult, pause before you speak and sense your motivation. From there, it will all flow better. This is the secret of wise speech. As the Buddha describes it, speak with kindly motivation. Speak what is true and helpful. Speak in due season and to the benefit of all. When we connect with our highest intention, we learn to see with the eyes of compassion and everything becomes more workable." And then lastly, the practice that I want to suggest that you might want to try are just a couple of acronyms. Acronyms can be helpful because they're easier to remember. And they are the acronyms WAIT and THINK. So the acronym WAIT is a great, WAIT, is a great one to have pop into the mind right before speaking. And it asks us the question, why am I talking? Why am I talking? Because if we can see, oh, I'm speaking from a place of aversion, or I'm speaking to build myself up, or I'm speaking from a place of care and connection and love, we can make a choice of whether to follow that. Wendy, thank you for the laughing face. We can see if it's actually, you know, something we want to say. It's interesting because I think if we were to actually follow these guidelines for speech, I can say, I think we'd probably speak less. So wait, why am I talking? And then the other acronym is THINK, THINK. And this is, T stands for true. Is it true? H stands for helpful. Is it helpful? In some way, you know, connecting, caring. I, inspirational. Well chosen and spoken with love. N, are our words necessary? Not everything we want to say needs to be said. And K, are our words kind? Think. All right. Thank you for your for listening, for your kind attention. And I wonder if now there are any questions or comments, sharings of any kind. You can do the little blue hand or the real live hand if you like. Wendy.
Hi, Eve. It's so lovely to have you lead the Sangha and hear your wise speech.
Thanks.
And your loving kindness. Well, so there's someone in my family who's emotionally and verbally abusive. And I have not been able to be like, you know, Buddhist-y around him.
Yeah.
I feel very reactive.
Yeah.
You know, hurt and angry. And so I've chosen to try to avoid him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best I've been able to come up with. But you know, sometimes I do have to speak. I don't know. I don't have a clear question. I guess it's sort of like maybe how to work with reactivity in yourself when you are not very composed or mindful.
Yeah. Well, if you're in the midst of speech, it really, really helps. A lot of practice has to do with remembering to practice. So this would require remembering to do this. But if you're in the midst of an interaction with somebody difficult, or any kind of speech, actually, it really helps to have some mindfulness of our body. Even if it's like mindfulness of the soles of our feet, it's like a little refuge right there in the midst of a difficult conversation. Just to feel maybe your whole body, or if not, just to feel the soles of your feet. It's like all this is happening and there's this neutral place down there in my feet.
Mm.
So, and this is something, if we had more time tonight, I would bring us through a practice. I don't know if we will, but this is something that's really wonderful to cultivate. So we cultivate mindfulness on the cushion and in daily life, but practicing sustaining some like 50% of our mindfulness in our own body while we're in interaction is really truly grounding and helpful. So that's something to work with. And to begin, if you're interested in that practice, it really helps to work. First of all, like Zoom is a good safe place to work where you could actually pin somebody, meaning there's a little choice to pin. Yeah. So you see their face up big. And then they don't know you're looking at them, but you practice keeping mindfulness in your body while you're looking at them. And then just in daily life, when you're just at the grocery store or talking to a neighbor, practice in a neutral situation. And then that practice will be more available to you in the larger situation. The other thing is, you know, with difficult, really, really difficult people, is just support of like-minded others, you know, having, doing some bookending, like if you know a difficult conversation is coming up, you text or call a friend and say, this conversation is coming. And then you know that when it's over, you'll text or call that friend again. Noble friendship, you know, what I was, that story about the elephant and the wise people talking, calming the elephant down, having friends who can like kind of support you and witness you can make a huge difference with mm-hmm. difficult people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be my response.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Zach.
Can you repeat those acronyms one more time, please?
Of course. Yeah. So the first one is wait, they're wait and think. And then the wait is what? Oh no, I'm sorry. Why am I talking? It's really cool with mindfulness because all you have to do is make that inquiry and mindfulness will go happily looking for the answer. It's like the mind loves a treasure hunt. And so we can ask, why am I talking? And then pause. And then we can usually feel, or sometimes we can feel why we have the impulse to say what we're saying. And if the impulse is a good one, then yes, we should definitely speak. You can usually feel when it's motivated by anger or by craving, you know. And then the other one, think, to read. The T is true. Is it true? If not, don't speak. Is it helpful? Is it my speech? Is it supportive to others or to myself to say this thing? I, inspirational, you know, offering hope or encouragement. N, necessary. Not everything that we feel an urge to say needs to be said. And K, kind.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, anything else tonight?
I have a question.
Yeah, Nathan.
And I guess my question is it sometimes wise to abstain from speech, especially if like you're being asked a question that you're not certain if it's meant to harm you or if you just have a sense of, oh, I'm not so sure this, the intent of this question.
Yeah. And 100%. So yes. There could be a lot of different reasons to abstain, including the one that you're from speaking at all, including the one that you're describing. The Buddha did that a lot. People would ask him inappropriate questions or questions where he felt like the answer wouldn't help them with their clarity or their progress spiritually. So he'd just not respond. Yeah, restraint around any action, whether it's a speech or a bodily action, that might not be helpful is highly recommended in the Buddhist canons. Restraint is considered to be a beautiful quality.
God.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. You're welcome. All right. Well, again, thank you so much, everybody. We'll close. I'll sing. We have time tonight, so I'll grab my guitar here next to me and sing a version of the Dedication of Merit. This is, if you don't know, a Dedication of Merit is traditionally done at the end of gatherings where we've practiced together, which we have tonight. And merit means good energy. Dedication means generosity. So we take the good energy that we've generated and we offer it tonight for the benefit of all. May every living being, our minds as one and radiant with light, share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity, may our minds awake to great compassion, wisdom, and to joy. May kindness find reward, may all who sorrow leave our grief and may this boundless light meet the darkness of our sacred night. Because our hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. May all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate and wise. All right. Wishing you a good week. Take good care. See you next time.
One question. Thank you so much, Eve.
Yeah. Bye.
Question, Eve?
Yeah.
So my question is there any way to access your music? Do you have any CDs out or anything?
I do. If you go to my website, evedecker.com, there's a page, Listen By. I have 5 CDs.
Evedecker.com.
That song I just did is on the album Simple Truth. Dedication of Merit is on Simple Truth. Or you could buy it separately on Apple Music. And they're all on Spotify too.
Spotify.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And you I want to make a plug for your classes, which is also on your website. She's a great teacher. She does classes and the sit and sing.
Yeah.
More on the website?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm your groupie promoter.
Thank you, Wendy.
She's wonderful. She's absolutely wonderful.
Can you join if you didn't start at the beginning?
No, but I'll have another series starting in August.
Okay.
Yeah, or you can come to this Tuesday night sit and sing Sangha anytime. We just meditate and sing together. That's all we do.
Is it in your backyard now?
No, it's still online.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. You have a lovely voice.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you, Eve. Have a
thank you, Wendy. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Eve. Thank you, Eve.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Good to see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, Wendy.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.